In the morning, July 23rd. We've got their number, believe me, on this coronavirus scheme. The word is out on the street, and we have their number. And it's not 867-5309. It's you're locked up in your house, and these people are crazy criminals. You listen to that song. If you grew up when I did in the '80s. You remember who you were with a lot of the times when you listen to this music that you grew up with. That's why music is very powerful. You remember who you were with, what you were drinking, who you were trying to score with. And trying to reach them on the phone when there was no call waiting. There was no cell phones. There was... Man, I keep getting a busy signal. I'm trying to reach this chick, man. So when I listen to songs like that, I don't know when this song came out. I guess I'm going to say like early 80s or something, because I remember it through high school. I got out of high school in 85, so it brings back memories. So anyway, actually better days. You can't argue that. Unfortunately, in high school, the Franciscan brothers and priests used to tell us, your best days are ahead of you, gentlemen. We're preparing you for those. Oh, man. Did they ever get that wrong? Not their fault, but they did prepare us for this stuff. So one out of two isn't bad. But we're moving on here. A lot of stuff happening. I always say that because it's true. And another new camera angle tonight. The microphone's lower. I don't know what's going on. We're trying with this video podcast on Patreon.com. Let me turn this off. Got this heater on down here. My German Shepherd used to come in here. Sully, a lot of you guys have been listening for a while. Remember Sully. She's no longer with us, but she used to come in here. She'd hear me getting fired up and dropping F-bombs, and she'd be scratching at the door saying, what's going on in there? Is there something I should know about? And sometimes she would just break into the through the door after looking around. And she used to sit, lay right down here, and I have this little heater down here. But I have to tell you, guys, I'm not, like, slamming my wife or anything, but if you're been with your lady for a while and she's in her 50s and certain things start to happen, midlife, whatever, and my house is like an icebox. I don't know what's going on in this house. It's like you could hang frozen meats in this joint. I mean, it's I don't know how hot it is outside, maybe 80, 90 degrees in the evening. And we're taping this one kind of late because we broke another late one the big Wednesday podcast. We had a whole back on it until we got all the intel together. And so that came out late last night, so about 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. And it's got to be 85 degrees outside. I don't know what it is in this house. There's like a setting. It's like meat, salami, frozen meat, frozen beef, chicken, frozen chicken. So if you're in my shoes, gentlemen, you know what I'm talking about. And the electricity bill is no joke. So I throw the heater on every now and then when it gets too cold in here. Anyway, so shout out to the folks out there on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit that are watching the video podcast. And also enjoy the More Pain show on Tuesday nights. And I think we're going to be adding more stuff on the subscriber-only area. And this is a hell of a podcast we did. Episode 33, for all you folks out there that... for all the deep state heads out there who always reference 33 and stuff, and rightly so, for a number of reasons, but... that came together nicely with its meaning of 33 and the Central Intelligence Agency and the Deutsche Bank. And you got to listen to that one. That was, the information came in fast and furious on that one. No pun intended for Eric Holder. Although Holder, of course, was involved. We'll dig into that as time goes on, but that's a good... first brushing, first coat of primer, and then some on the Judge Salas situation, whose son was killed and husband was shot in North Jersey. You have to listen to episode 33. That thing is something else. I think since we got it out late, we didn't really promote it, but I expect it to take off today. And we're off to the races here. Let's see what we got going. First headline, Central Florida doctors on coronavirus cases. We've seen a plateau. Oh. How about a little Don't You Lie to Me by Chuck Berry. We've even played any Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry is not played enough on the radio for a number of reasons, I guess, but... we don't like this old stuff, man. It sounds too jazzy, man. What's the matter with this guy? Don't You Lie to Me. This is one of the theme songs with CoronaCon. It's getting damn ridiculous. For the last several weeks, I've been trying to pressure Governor DeSantis into shutting the state down again, and I just spent time in Florida, and we talk about that on episode 33. And what I saw in Florida, and it doesn't resemble anything that we see in the media. Nothing. No one believes this. No one wants to wear masks. No one gives two shits about the fake numbers that are in the media. And now, the media for months has been pounding this. Oh, there's chaos in Florida. It's chaos in Florida. Now, there's another story that counters that. But more importantly, going to Florida and seeing the people. As they say in Slapshot, Denny Lemieux, the goalie, says, we go to Florida, we get the money. Him and Paul Newman. But going to Florida and seeing the people there and how they behave and what they think and talking to them, eye-opening. So I share some of those insights on episode 33 as well. Central Florida doctors offered a glimmer of positivity during a Tuesday briefing alongside Governor Ron DeSantis, stating that they have seen a plateau of the Chinese coronavirus. What we're seeing across all of Florida, and I look at the data for Advent Health across Florida, is that we've reached a plateau now, Dr. David Moorhead, Executive Vice President of Advent Health, said. Obviously, no one can predict the future, but for over the last week, we've had a very significant plateau, which has been incredibly welcomed. He continued, noting a decrease in ICU volume. We've seen a plateau that we are incredibly grateful for, he added. How many times does this guy want to say plateau? Is that his key word? He gets paid every time he uses plateau. Event Health's Dr. Scott Brady, Senior Vice President of Ambulatory Systems, also said they've seen a flattening in the last week. A Wednesday morning snapshot from the state's Agency for Healthcare Administration showed Orange County with 21.9% in available hospital bed capacity, slightly greater than the state's overall 21.41% availability, and 580 hospitalizations with primary diagnosis of COVID. Seminole County reported 17% available bed capacity with 177 coronavirus-related hospitalizations. It'd be interesting if they broke down the census, so to speak. I think it was episode 31 we did with the whistleblower working in the massive health system who said, yeah, okay, some of the ICUs are crowded, yeah, but it's not all COVID. It's like 25-30% of COVID. And the other people were in there because they were afraid to go to the hospital during the let's flatten the curve era. Remember that? That was supposed to run to... Fauci. We need to just flatten the curve for 15 days. Yeah. And no one's more credible than I am. 5 months later, we're still flattening the curve. This guy's something else. And he's still flattening the curve. Headline, hydroxychloroquine could save up to 100,000 lives if used for COVID-19, according to Yale epidemiology professor. Well, I thought that stuff was dangerous. Yeah, because you can't make money on it. Congratulations to Pfizer for milking, what was it, $2 billion out of the taxpayers today for their unproven coronavirus vaccine that probably will... I'm not taking that. No, thank you. No, thank you. And Trump said today, I said tonight I saw the headline. Where's it at? Hold on. Let me get it on my phone because I couldn't believe it. I get all kind of crazy. They're not crazy. There's just a crazy amount of stuff that people send me. Texts and things like that. And they're like, what's going on? It was a clip from the New York Post. CIA paper. If you listen to my take on the New York Post on the More Pain show, you'll understand more about what I'm talking about. But this broke 10 o'clock last night. We'll probably get something up on it today. But it wasn't prepped as part of the news here by my crack squad, but I figured I'd throw it in. President Trump says he would take coronavirus vaccine first if asked to. Okay, I'm asking you to take it. See how you guys, whoever wants to take it first, you guys take it first, and I'll be right behind you about 3 or 4 years when all the research is done and people have dropped off like flies, then I'll jump in. So you guys knock yourself out and let me know how it goes. Because I'm not getting involved in this insanity. So what do we have music for this? Suspicious Minds. How about Point of No Return? What's the next song? See, this music is picked out. Yeah, we'll do Point of No Return. Nah. How about a little BJ Thomas? Okay, Suspicious Minds. B.J. Thomas wrote a lot of songs. If you guys remember that show, B.J. and the Bear, back in the 70s and 80s, but he's written a lot of songs, sung and made famous gold records and platinum records by other people. Of course, Elvis Presley made this song famous, but Elvis Presley sang a lot of other B.J. Thomas songs. and made them famous as well. So, Suspicious Minds, that's where we're at when it comes to vaccines. So we'll go with BJ. Dr. Harvey Risch, an epidemiology professor at Yale School of Public Health, said on Tuesday that he thinks hydroxychloroquine could save 75,000 to 100,000 lives if the drug is widely used to treat coronavirus. There are many doctors that I've gotten hostile remarks about saying that all the evidence is bad for it, and in fact, that is not true at all, Risch said, adding that he believes the drug can be used as a prophylactic for frontline workers, as other countries like India have already done. Risch lamented that a propaganda war is being waged against the use of the drug for political purposes, not based on medical facts. Researchers at the Henry Ford Health System in Southeast Michigan have found that early administration of hydroxychloroquine makes hospitalized patients substantially less likely to die. We know that they won't be able to use it in New York and New Jersey. The study, published in the International Journal of Infectious Diseases, I think we used to have copies of that at the fraternity house. That was our coffee table book at the frat house. Yeah, it's in the Journal of Infectious Diseases. God, we want to. Does this thing have photos? We're going to match up some photos. We're having problems here. The study determined that hydroxychloroquine provided a 66% hazard ratio reduction, and hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin together a 71% reduction compared with neither treatment. Suspicious Minds, talking about suspicious pants back then, in those days, fraternity days. Risch said that most in the mainstream are not allowing people to speak about the evidence of the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine. Risch also said discussions about the drug became political as opposed to medical. Yeah, thanks to guys like Fauci, who doesn't profit. Who cares if it works? Fauci and his pharma goons and his puppet master Gates can't make money. Can you believe it's like 2:30 in the morning? I'm still getting texts from people. I don't know what to do about that. Well, there's people on the West Coast. Sometimes they provide really good information, so you got a 24/7 operation around here. All the evidence is actually good for it when it is used in outpatient uses. Nevertheless, the only people who actually say they are a whole pile of doctors who are on the front lines treating those patients across the country, and they are the ones who are at risk being forced not to do it, Risch said, arguing that the mainstream media is not covering the benefits of hydroxychloroquine. No kidding. He's right. We've seen problem after problem after problem, and just in that episode 31, I think it was, Thomas Paine episode 31, this whistleblower saying that their hospital system just abruptly ended their hydroxychloroquine clinical trials that they were having in-house. It was supposed to run from June to October, and it just ended. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. We can't really make sure. We don't really know if this thing works or not. So listen to episode 31 if you haven't done so already. And because the hospital wants to bring in remdesivir at $5,000 a pop a treatment, right? Instead of $15 a treatment. Cha-ching! Why else would you end your clinical trial months early when you didn't even have enough of a sampling to make a definitive decision whether it was good or bad? So follow the money, baby. Follow the money. Just like we did, we followed the money on More Pain show on Tuesday night when it came to this shooting in Deutsche Bank and the federal judge. And we followed that money even further down the trail last night when we cut episode 33 loose. So we are following, building a chain, adding links at every stop. Headline, New York City mayor's crucial $52 million COVID-19 hospital treated just 79 patients before they closed the doors. This, is, of course, is talking about the New York City mayor and queen, Bill de Blasio. Let's see what we got for this idiot. Oh, yeah. Play this. I dedicate this song to New York City. The old New York City, a once great place to visit and hang out, drink, and get chased by the police. Get stopped by the police, get harassed by the police back in the day. Of course, there's a lot more interesting things I could say, and when we get to know each other a little better, maybe I will. Back in the running with the DEA guys, I can't even tell those stories. Point of no return by Kansas. That's where the New York City is right now. Democratic New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio declared in March that the city needed an expensive, crucial emergency hospital to treat the predicted flood of COVID-19 patients. The hospital, which cost a whopping $52 million, treated a total of 79 patients before shutting down 33 days later on May 13th.
Wait, I thought there was a crucial situation. Oh, we're packed. People are dying. They're piling bodies up in the street. Refrigerated trucks. Look at all the refrigerated trucks.
Yeah, but none of them have the fucking... none of them have the chillers and the condensers running. They're not on. As I told Jason Goodman, he said, there's a bunch of refrigerated trucks down here. I said, go back to the video. They're not running. You spend enough time around ice rinks, you know what a chiller sounds like and what a condenser sounds like. An industrial size, so. Wow, look at all the refrigerated trucks that aren't even running. What a fucking sham. The story of the temporary hospital built at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in Queens is detailed in the new expose by the New York Times. The piece cites missteps made at every level of government. Wow, New York Times is on it. From well before the hospital opened on April 10th. I basically got paid $2,000 a day to sit on my phone and look at Facebook, a nurse practitioner told the Times. We all felt guilty. I felt really ashamed, to be honest. Well, I'm sure you made TikTok videos to make up for it. In March, just as the virus began sweeping across the city, de Blasio said that this facility will be crucial. An aide to the mayor, Jackie Bray, told the paper the alternative space was less used than we expected it to be because we broke the curve. Thank goodness. Yeah, you guys broke the curve, all right. Your malfeasance and stupidity and fraud closed the country down. I mean, let's just be honest, right? This was a New York issue. And everyone reacting to this COVID situation in D.C., it was a result of the madness in New York City. It really wasn't a problem anywhere else. This is what happens when these people want to do something nefarious. They use New York City as a launching pad. Go back in history. Read between the lines. That's what I'm saying. And then you can pull some major events and see that, oh, everything's happening in New York because they can control it. It's the epicenter of the Communist Manifesto. And I'm going to have to rest the voice this weekend. Woo-wee. It's getting a little raspy. Starting to sound like B. Arthur. The Times piece says doctors at other hospitals wanted to transfer patients to the temporary facility but were blocked by bureaucracy. turf battles, communication failures, according to internal documents and interviews with workers. The Times is like now trying. The Times, who created much of the mayhem, is now pulling back. This is what they do. They create mayhem. They plant stories, and then they pull back when the narrative starts to change, and they say, "Hey, we could win more prizes here if we expose the scheme that we helped build." it's not a lie. This is how they work. Since we're going to keep reading about this, see if I can play something in the background. Oh yeah, this is a good New York Times story. Little Bananarama. Cruel summer. New York paid as much as $732 an hour for some doctors at the Billie Jean King Center Hospital, but the city made them spend hours on paperwork. They were supposed to treat coronavirus patients, but they did not accept people with fevers. That's a hallmark symptom of the virus. I'm telling you, de Blasio and Cuomo should be under investigation for manslaughter. I mean, instead they're lauded and celebrated by the cement heads and the other side of the aisle. Officials said the site would serve critically ill patients, but workers said it opened with only one or two ventilators. Well, that's actually a good thing, considering that Cuomo was slapping everybody on ventilators. You know the Elmo characters out there and the Sesame Street characters? He was slapping them on ventilators. Everybody gets a ventilator. It's like Oprah. People were dying. Let's get those death numbers up, people. We have a script here to follow. Sadly, it's not really that much of a departure from the truth. The temporary hospital at the tennis center wasn't the only one in the city that went mostly unused. Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo, Governor Nipple Rings, persuaded the federal government to pitch in millions to turn the massive Javits Center into a field hospital in a rush to outfit the USNS Comfort ship with 500 beds to handle the overflow from packed hospitals. The ship was being overhauled in Norfolk, Virginia, when the Navy had to rush the work to deploy the ship quickly. But the hospital ship held fewer than 80 patients in New York City, leaving nearly 90% of its available space unused after its emergency dispatch to the U.S. epicenter of the coronavirus crisis. You understand what's going on here? This is a fucking scheme. This is all like a show. A Javits Center, outfitted with medical equipment and 2,500 beds, was also little used. As of April 7th, the convention center had admitted only 66 patients. This was due large in part to the strict admission requirements. Are you sick? I'm really sick. Get the fuck out of here. Hit the bricks, pal. They don't let anybody, they don't let sick people into the hospital. Yeah, and you wonder why your fucking death rate's up, you dumb fucking stooge Cuomo. He's not even dumb. This is done on purpose. He plays dumb. He and his brother play two morons on TV. This is all part of the script, believe me. At first, a patient could only be transferred to Javits if they were convalescing or in the recovery period. The fear was that Javits didn't have the ICU beds, operating rooms, or equipment necessary to handle patients who might relapse or need surgery because of the underlying condition. This story doesn't even mention the other hospital that they threw out. Samaritan's Purse came from, I think, North Carolina. Reverend Billy Graham's and his son's group, they set up a field hospital in Central Park. And after, at their own expense, by the way, at their own expense, okay, through charitable donations to handle overflow from this disastrous situation in New York, where most of the people who died were in nursing homes, and then they made it look like, oh, people are piling up at the hospitals. No, they're not. You're killing old people. Okay? You're killing thousands of old people. Anyway, they threw Samaritan's purse out on their ass. Ready for this? They invite them to come to New York City, right? I think they were attached to Mount Sinai Hospital. So they would take Mount Sinai's overflow. And after setting up, days to set up, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you'd have to think, in equipment and personnel and everything else. I would say millions. Some of the cement heads, politicians in New York, said, we don't want them here because they're against the gay marriage and this whole thing, right? So they pack up and they left. Does that sound like there's an epidemic? There's a pandemic in your city when you're throwing hospitals out and you're building other ones and no one's going to? Does that sound like there's a pandemic? No. Bullshit. It's all fucking bullshit. Okay. New headline. Obey. The word obey appears in Kentucky skies just days after Democratic governor's COVID-19 mask mandate. They're screwing up these states. How about a little Norman Greenbaum? A little spirit in the sky. A skywriter drew the word obey above a pair of Kentucky cities, WLEX reported TV. And the stunt took place just days after Democratic Governor Andy Beshear's COVID-19 mask mandate. Can you see this guy in school? Andy's having a tough time. He's not getting along with the kids there. We like a meeting with the principal. He's getting bullied. They're pushing him around. Can we get a meeting? Just had a meeting last week with this fucking kid. Tell him to stand up for himself. And he's not going to be pushed around. Oh, he's a sensitive kid. This is what happens. I always say this and people get mad at me, but if you haven't been punched in the face as a dude growing up, had your nose broken, bloodied, been in a fist fight where you're like, Jesus, this dude's pretty tough, and got your ass whooped a little bit, then you grow up and you're like Andy Beshear. Andy's having a tough time in the state house. WLEX said Obey appeared above Lexington and Frankfort last Tuesday, and many viewers contacted the station about what they witnessed. In Kentucky, it's like, is that a UFO? What the hell going on? Get out of here, Mildred. Get the shotgun. Of course, there's great people from Kentucky. I'm just kind of having some fun. The station noted that the Obey skywriting recalls a 1980s movie, They Live, about a totalitarian society. Rest in peace, Roddy Piper. Roger Choi of Lexington told WLEX he saw the Obey message in the sky, hopped on FlightAware.com, tracked the flight pattern, and learned the plane spent about an hour in the air over Lexington and Frankfort before returning to Danville. This guy's like, this is serious. The WLEX said it tracked the plane that performed the skywriting to Ghost Rider Air Shows of Boyle County. The pilot, who didn't want to be identified, said he'd been bombarded with calls about the stunt. He told the station that he was hired to write Obey in the Sky above the two cities, but he would not disclose the name of his client or how much the job cost. Yeah, because they would track the people down, and who knows? These people are completely off of their fucking rocker. Oh, always liked this song. Take a quick drink here. Listen, Miami is enforcing a mandatory face coverings with dedicated unit of cops to harass people. It's unbelievable. Did they just like burn down half the city or riot and destroy half the city? Maybe put the cops on the street to stop that. Swear to God, we are surrounded by dickweeds, flaming dickweeds. Miami, well, you know, it's a big party in Miami now, right? It's a party. You can burn the city down. You can pillage the city, harass people, assault people, march down the street and pretend that somehow you've been aggrieved in Miami with those rents and how much those cocktails cost down there. You'd be better off swimming to Cuba for your mojito. But they're aggrieved. So that's cool. You can hang out in the street. It's a big party down there, a big street party. Summer of love like it was in Seattle, right? But if you don't wear a mask, boy, here come the cops. You know what? We'll play a little bit. It's a big party down there. Let's have a little Miami Sound Machine. Gloria Stefan's in the street. Big party. Unless you're not wearing a mask, then you get your ass locked up. It's okay. Don't worry about that. Six pallets of cocaine that just went by. That guy doesn't have a mask on. Get him. Miami, the area of Florida hit hardest by the Chinese coronavirus, is doubling down on its mask order, reportedly deploying a team of dedicated police officers to enforce the requirements. One of the cops should carry an old beatbox with this on, and when they show up, it'd be like, We're here for your masks. We're gonna lock up your ass. Everybody, where's your mask? You're going downtown. It's insane. Okay, it's fucking crazy, these people. Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez announced the updated mask order on July 1st, requiring masks in all public spaces inside and outdoors throughout Miami-Dade County. This is great news for the drug traffickers down there. You might... If you see people wearing masks with straws sticking out of the nose, you know they have a chemical dependency. Could be another windfall for local police. The order essentially expanded on his April mask order, requiring coverings to be worn outdoors with a few exceptions. Penalties for non-compliance include up to $500 in fines and jail time. So it's more expensive to wear a mask, not wear a mask, than it is to score an 8-ball in Miami. I could get 6 people across the border for $500 from Cuba in Miami, and you're going to fine me $500 for not wearing a mask? I'll be playing this song when I'm running my illicit coyote operation. You have to laugh at it because it's getting to the point where it's just stupid. These people are fucking nuts. City officials are now looking to ramp up enforcement, reportedly dedicating a team of 39 police officers to back the mandate. The first 3 offenses will come with a fine of $50, $100, and $500, depending on if it was a first, second, or third violation. After that, the individual can face jail time. But that's okay, because it's a party in Miami. Oh, Jesus, God Almighty. Gotta have, like, you have to have a sense of humor. It's as simple as that. 14 plus people shot near a Chicago funeral home, and the feds are planning to deploy agents to the city. Let's play some Chicago. They have a serious problem out there, and no one seems to be able to fix it with the violence. What do we got for Chicago? We haven't played any Chicago. I know that because I was looking for it earlier tonight. Hard Habit to Break, Chicago. Let's play that. This is like a love song, man. This goes out to Mayor Lori Lightfoot. It's a dedication. If you're out there, Mayor, we love you. If you're out there, Mayor, make like the Minneapolis policing. Get the fuck out of town. This is another one of those songs, if you, you know, in the 80s, you remember where you were. Or maybe in what the the backseat of what kind of car you're at. In or if you were sneaking into what was left of the drive-in scene back in the day. We had those around Philly. They closed them down. Man, we had some good times at the drive-in, both of them. Anyway, before I start crying, over a dozen people were shot near a funeral home in Chicago on Tuesday afternoon as a group of people left the funeral home. People in a black vehicle opened fire on the group as they left the funeral, and at least 60 shell casings were found at the scene. 14 people were being treated at 5 area hospitals. Police said their conditions were unknown, while Chicago fire officials said at least 11 of them were listed in serious to critical condition. The news comes after Chicago Democrat Mayor Lori Lightfoot, tweeted, "Under no circumstances will I allow Donald Trump's troops to come to Chicago and terrorize our residents." Yeah, because our residents are doing just a bang-up job of terrorizing each other. We don't need any additional terror. Mr. President or not, I don't care one bit what your name is, Lightfoot added. I will not allow troops in Chicago. I will do everything in my power to stop you. You have no power, you bird brain. Your city's a battle zone. It's a toilet. It's a cesspool. And you're the fucking tidy bowl man, sitting in a rowboat in the middle of a pile of a literal cesspool. Our democracy is at stake, and I'll be darned if I'm going to let anybody, even if their name is Mr. President, bring those kind of troops to our city and try to take down our residents. To take down your residents? It's a shooting gallery out in that bitch. Your residents are getting gunned down. Like I said, you're doing a perfectly bang-up job of taking your own residents down and out. It makes the Valentine's Day massacre in Chicago look like a Hallmark card. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen in Chicago, and I'm going to use every tool at my disposal to stop them. Well, you have plenty of tools already in your own administration. I'm sure you can tap them. The Trump administration was reportedly planning on sending approximately 150 federal agents to Chicago to help battle the violence. Chicago may see an influx of federal agents as soon as this week as President Donald Trump readies to make good on repeated pledges. He would try to tamp down the violence here, the Chicago Tribune reported. U.S. Department of Homeland Security, for example, is crafting plans to deploy about 150 federal agents to the city this week, the Chicago Tribune has learned. So Mayor Beetlejuice out there is a little upset. She's going to get her ego stepped on a little bit by Washington, D.C. Somebody should kick that milk crate out from under that midget. Teacher who's boss. And the way to do that is to put some people out there that can actually govern and help the police are overtaxed, to say the least, in Chicago. Overtaxed, overrun, underfunded. Here's a funny one. It's not really funny, I guess. It's just interesting. Goes against the grain. Red Bull fires woke diversity directors who tried to push for BLM support. See, it's like you don't usually see that. Red Bull. Well, we'll have to go with it then. Bulls on parade. Red Bull has fired two diversity directors. These folks at Citigroup, they never really did much. There was never really any problems at Citi with diversity and people getting along and things like that. But these people, like, would come up with these schemes that actually, I think, made things worse. They're almost like hiring a community activist like Obama. Bringing that nonsense into your workplace when there's not really any problems. It was this weirdest thing. And by the way, these guys never last. They cause a lot of trouble, and they sow a lot of division, and then they find themselves back on the unemployment line. I've seen it happen at Citi time after time after time. Red Bull fired two diversity directors who tried to force the company into virtue signaling about Black Lives Matter while also dissolving several culture teams who were pressuring Red Bull to take a more aggressive woke political stance. Stefan Kozak is North American chief executive and Amy Taylor, its North American president and chief marketing officer, have both left the Austrian drink company after they tried to create a scheme within the business about its supposed inaction on Black Lives Matter movement. What does Red Bull have to do with Black Lives Matter? Everybody drinks Red Bull. I used to drink 6-7 Red Bulls a day. Get all fired up. I'm just kidding. Keep a lot of empty Red Bull cans around when the probation officer comes around. You drink that stuff? Yeah, man, I fucking drink it, man. It's crazy. It's great, man. I feel great. You never know what I'm going to do next. Get the fuck out of my house. Not really that far from the truth. According to the Wall Street Journal, Ms. Taylor had been working on diversity and inclusion efforts within the company with Mr. Kozak's support for several years, but was met with opposition when she began advocating for Red Bull to be more overt in its support for racial justice in the last month. Citing insiders, Business Insider reports that the firings were retaliation against Kozak and Taylor for trying to create internal tension around diversity issues and pressure the company to make more diversity hires. I want to know how many bulls they actually hired. So, like, livestock, lives matter. And why are the bulls red? That seems racist. Has anybody reached out to the Native Americans to ask them why Red Bull is red? And whether that's culturally appropriate? Red Bull also cut or dissolved entertainment and cultural teams in Canada, the UK, and Austria, and canceled most of its major cultural events. The culture teams, according to employees, were the most vocal about racial justice matters and were therefore fired as a punishment for trying to force Red Bull into a political direction it didn't want to take. See, I told you, these diversity dopes that major companies hire. It never works out. They cause more problems. And I have not read this, so it's exactly panning out like I said at the beginning of the story. I could tell you some crazy stories with the folks we had at Citigroup, but I'm not going to because one of them should have been charged criminally, but we'll just leave it at that. I mean, people go haywire, and they get away with it for reasons that we all understand. If you work in that environment, a Fortune 50, Fortune 100 company, some folks are untouchable. The firings are unsurprising, given that Red Bull is owned by 76-year-old billionaire Dietrich Mateschitz. Made shits. Some would say after drinking Red Bull that he made some shits, put it in a bottle and a can, who has previously spoken out against political correctness and showed sympathy for Donald Trump. Oh, they'll make it about Trump now, right? What do we have besides that? That's okay. We'll just read it. Made shits. I'm not kidding. That's his name, Made shits. You grow up with a name like that, you're either going to be successful or you're going to get your ass whooped on a regular basis. Mateschitz also previously criticized German Chancellor Angela Merkel for encouraging over a million refugees to flood into Germany at the height of the migrant crisis. I like this Mateschitz guy. I seem to like him. That's where we're at. That's it for today. Payne in the Morning. Coming off a Thomas Payne podcast episode 33, the magic episode 33, the magic number. You might want to check that out. Some people, I would anticipate today, Thursday, that people will be checking it out because we dropped it late Wednesday. Another fun episode. I was in getting myself back, getting my mojo back from traveling along the eastern seaboard of the United States, like a whole old-style road trip, you know, a couple thousand miles in a couple days to squeeze it in. Maybe down the road we'll get, like, something bigger in place, or we get, like, some kind of vehicle and we go see what's going on in other parts of the country. But for right now, I wanted to get out there and stick my nose around a little bit and talk to people. I like talking to people. I was a street reporter for a long time. There's no fucking fear. I'll talk to anybody. Ask my family. They are tired of me talking to people. And I roll up on people and I study them before I talk to them. And it's part of a trade. It's part of the trade craft of getting people to tell you things and putting them at ease pretty quickly. And I think that probably shines through on a lot of the interviews we do. I've done on the Thomas Paine podcast. People are just laid back and they, when the folks feel comfortable, they usually tell you things that they wouldn't necessarily tell other people in the media. That's kind of my, one of my philosophies. Good cop works better than bad cop. So again, we appreciate the folks out there on patreon.com/truepundit. And Subscribestar.com/truepundit and watching the video cast and supporting us. If you're finding some value in what we're doing, we do appreciate the support there. We're not funded by millionaires and billionaires. We're funded by you folks, the readers, the listeners, and the viewers. And that's how we are keeping the lights on. And we appreciate your assistance, direct assistance, on those platforms. And I can't stop saying it because I actually read the platforms. There's a lot of traffic on there, people talking. It's grown into something really nice as far as we're concerned. We've using it now for intel purposes until it's late at night. I'm stammering. It is 2:55 a.m. on the East Coast. And after I finish this, I think I'm going to go and hit the hay. but I got some editing to do on this. And so when you're listening to this in like 2 or 3 hours, this is about as fresh as it's going to get, pay in the morning. So as I say at the end of every show, take care. God bless.
And it's bigger than your life, but it's only what you're hearing. Will you still remember when the morning light has come? Will the songs be playing on?